Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The golden age of serial murders was a span of 40 years when murder ran rampant through the United States of America with the likes of prolific killers and cold case murders. Today, we cover a case known as the Lady of the Dunes, which is a cold case from the Golden Age in 1974, which gained some new life in 2022 when her identity was finally uncovered. My name's Ben.
And I'm Nicole, and you're listening to Wicked and Grim,
a true crime podcast. Recording in the morning this time instead of late at night. How's it going? Good morning.
Yeah, so there's no beer opening or anything, I guess.
No, I don't even have coffee this morning, so it's just tea.
We're tea slurping.
Yeah, I'm out of coffee. Officially ran out yesterday, had a little bit of a panic attack, and I mean, the tea's actually doing the job.
Okay, I was like, what a terrible day.
Well, I mean, I don't drink the coffee for the caffeine. I drink it for that warm hug feeling in the morning. Mm. And the tea is, it's sufficing. Mm-hmm. I don't think it would day after day, but it is definitely sufficing. It can fill that void.
It's doing the trick for the day, hey? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going out later, so I'll get you some more coffee.
Appreciate that. Thank you. That's what marriage is about. You out of coffee, I got your back.
Yeah, well, it's also for myself too, right?
What? What?
Because lots of times they say like coffee wakes you up and makes you in a better mood and stuff. So I'm doing it for myself too.
Oh, I thought you meant like the part of marriage was for you specifically. Oh. I was like, okay. Oh my God. And generally people get something out of marriage. I would think there'd be something for you in there.
I would think so too. Yeah.
Wow.
Holy, I love how you took that so differently. Oh.
Well, I'm a little bit slow this morning. It's freaking daylight savings time like 2 days ago or one day.
Yeah.
When was it? Saturday. Well, technically Sunday morning.
Yeah. Isn't it like 2 in the morning?
2 in the morning. Yeah. I hate daylight savings time. It's the dumbest thing in the world, in my opinion. I think it's absurd.
I mean, it's probably not necessary, really.
I don't think it is.
They talk every year, I feel like there's a discussion about, you know, not having it anymore, but.
Well, there are places that don't have it, across Canada and the States even.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It is what it is. I feel like I don't even worry about
it. Care?
Because I can't change it, right?
Touche. But I just think it's absurd. It's like, oh, you don't have enough light at this portion of the day, so we're going to give you light at that portion of the day, but in order to do so, we're going to take it away from this part of the day because we can't just extend it.
Well, yeah, and especially if you have kids and stuff, like it messes it up.
It does. It like just
the schedules and
let people have their natural cycle.
Like, yeah,
come on now.
Yeah,
I don't know. That's my view of it.
I think that's a pretty common view.
I think so too. Anyways, we got to thank some patrons who support the show. So this week we had a few awesome people sign up, and I'm probably going to butcher their names, but I am going to try my best. So here we go. Thank you so much to Lori DeLaurentis, Jessica Smith, Paul Montoya, and Daniel Supernault. So thank you very much to all of you for signing up on Patreon, supporting the show and being here and listening and just being freaking awesome and wicked.
Yeah. No kidding. Thank you so freaking much.
Freaking much.
Freaking much.
And speaking of Patreon, this case comes from Patreon today.
It does. Yeah, they get a lot of say, actually.
They do.
In cases that we end up choosing.
So we did give us some recommendations on the last Patreon case. And so they put out a bunch of recommendations, and we took, like, I think it was the top four that kind of piqued our interest. Mm-hmm. And then we did a poll voting on Patreon. And the top one was the Patreon episode.
The exclusive episode.
The exclusive one for the month that we did. But this one was number two in that voting poll, and it kind of piqued my interest. So that's what we're doing today.
We're doing it too.
I didn't even tell the patrons that this was going to be the case until, like, I don't know, I think it was like last night when we were going to bed
or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So they only knew that this was going to be their recommendation on this case just slightly before you guys.
Yeah. But they seemed so stoked. So
they were stoked. I'm stoked on it too.
Well, it sounds very interesting. I mean, your intro, I was just like, oh, wow.
Well, it is. It's a cold case from back in the 70s that there was literally no trail. And I'm going to be honest with you right now. This case, there's not a whole lot of information because the trail was just so cold for so long.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's all it is.
So, yeah.
We're going to dive into this cold case and how it actually got its breath of life, metaphorically speaking, in 2022.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's do her.
Okay. So on July 26th, 1974, a little 12-year-old girl was out on a mission. She's running after her barking dog in Race Point Dunes in Provincetown, Massachusetts. I'm pretty sure many people have been there before, you know, chasing after your dog. It gets off the leash, or the leash gets yanked out of your hand, right?
Yeah, and the dog's just like, woohoo!
Yeah, no matter how much you call its name, it just goes and goes and goes, probably chasing a squirrel or something. Mm-hmm. But that's exactly the situation for this little girl. She's going after her dog, who is not listening to her whatsoever, and just taking off. So the only thing is, something was different. Soon this little girl would find her dog would stop and allow her to catch up. The dog was now distracted, intensely sniffing. And when the girl approached, in that moment, things took a very dark turn. As this little 12-year-old girl realized, she was now looking at the remains of a human body where her dog now stood.
Oh no.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, finding a body is horrible, but a little 12-year-old girl finding a body?
I know.
I don't love that.
We just had a couple cases ago, the case with Basid McLean, who murdered his mother, and there were parts strewn about the trash, and the dog found those parts as well.
Yeah.
So we had a case just like this not long ago, and you said that was like a fear of yours.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, just running across a body, but I just feel like, I mean, it would be traumatic no matter what age you are, but a 12-year-old, I mean, I guess the trauma would last with you a little bit longer.
Well, I think adults are generally speaking more adapt to handle trauma, not that they are necessarily able to deal with it better, but we're more adapt to think about it. You know, it couldn't impact us as hard, maybe. I don't know what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, also a 12-year-old may not even, I mean, they would know what death is, but they may not, you know what it is to the extent that like an adult would, right?
Or understand why someone could do that, you know, maybe not really fully understand murder. Death, I could probably understand a 12-year-old understanding that. Well, but murder might be a bit of a different concept.
And it's too young of an age to know that the world's shit.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right? It's really the ultimate thing.
Yeah. Well, authorities, though, regardless of this little girl, were notified immediately, and they quickly began their investigation at the scene. Now, the body that was found was that of a woman who is estimated to be between the ages of 25 and 40 years old. There were some reports that saying that she could be even as young as 20 and upwards of even 45 years old. But generally speaking, the consensus was between 25 and 40.
That's quite a range.
It is quite a range. And you'll understand why here in a moment. Because her body was giving off a very horrible odor as investigators did their work, because she was very badly decomposed.
Mm, yeah. Okay. That's kind of what I figured.
Yeah. So there was a very apparently significant insect activity on her body.
Nice.
Which this actually helps give a timeline to her death, as they can actually estimate based off the type of insects present at the scene and on the remains. And not only that, but how far along their life cycles is. So they're like, okay, if this insect is here and it's in this stage of life, then we can estimate that the body's been here for this amount of time.
Yeah, I knew that they would use the insects to their advantage, but you forget about that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I learned that one in like CSI way back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back when we were probably like, I don't know, 21 years old watching CSI on our weekends. Good times. In this case, though, it was estimated that she would have been deceased for approximately 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So she's been in this spot decomposing for the last 2 weeks. The woman had long red hair that was pulled back into a ponytail. Under her head was a pair of Wrangler jeans and a blue bandana. She had pink nail polish on her toes and was laying on a blanket. Though she was nearly decapitated from a reported extremely brutal strangling, her cause of death was instead from blunt force trauma to the side of her head.
Oh.
It was reported that the weapon was something that was suspected to be such as a shovel or a entrenching tool, which is kind of like a really big, like, pickaxe almost. It's like a pickaxe with like a shovel end. So it's like you can swing and like dig trenches in the war or whatever sort of thing.
Okay.
So something along those lines could have been used to deliver that final blow to the side of her head. Now, strangely enough, though, there were absolutely no signs of struggle present, which includes no defensive wounds. But there was evidence that sexual assault took place.
Okay.
So with those two things in mind, no defensive wounds and sexual assault took place.
So does that mean it was post?
It was most likely that this occurred post-mortem.
You know, oh, it's so terrible because it just like it almost just sounds like you're describing this beautiful woman and she's just like laying peacefully on this blanket and then you go deeper and like her head's almost decapitated. Like it's just, oh
yeah,
it's a good way to start the day listening to this.
Well, I mean, that whole like she's laying peacefully on the blanket sort of thing, that actually plays a rather big role in this. And like, I mean, honestly, everything we've talked about so far is actually very big if you really break it down. Like, for example, the post-mortem thing and the fact that it was like no defensive wounds. It's a very big piece of evidence, especially when coupled with the idea that the attacker may have been laying right next to her.
Yeah. So it's almost it's of someone that she probably knew, you know, maybe had a relationship with.
Exactly.
Dang. Now,
there was reportedly some sort of impression in the ground, which and also depending on how you look at it, but most likely how they were looking at it, the angle of the blow on her head suggested that the person was laying next to her as well, which began raising questions. Was she sleeping at the time? And more importantly, did she know her attacker?
Right.
Because she probably was sleeping next to her attacker on the ground in this position when they struck.
Oh, gosh. Okay. That's terrible.
It is.
I mean, but what the heck? They say, well, there's a reason why the main suspect is always
the significant other,
the partner. Yeah.
Yeah. It's usually someone in the most immediate family. Like a child goes missing. It's, you know, the parents, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, parents go missing. It's the children or a wife. It's the husband. The husband, it's the wife. It's immediate family.
Yeah.
And it's usually 9 times out of 10, ugh, I think, pretty spot on of an estimate.
It's just the worst.
Yeah. Anyways, now it was the most likely scenario that she did know the attacker and that she was asleep when the assault initially took place. The two have may been laying next to each other when she drifted off and the person had simply struck then.
Took the opportunity.
Yeah. One of the biggest details about the remains that were found, however, I've yet to mention. Both her hands and several of her teeth had been removed and were missing. She had no hands on her body.
Oh, they were cut off
and multiple teeth were pulled from her mouth.
Oh, okay.
It appeared as if whoever had committed this horrific crime did not want the authorities to identify the remains that they had just found, taking away dental impressions and fingerprints alike.
Okay, do you want to know something ridiculous? Is apparently I haven't woken up whatsoever because I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, I was actually kind of waiting for you to chime in and say it, but you didn't. So I just got to read my script and I was like, okay.
Oh, that is the worst. I was like, oh, that's so weird in my head. And then, oh, yeah, that's why.
Taking away her identity.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep. Which is exactly why this case was cold for so long.
Because they had no idea who the fuck she was.
You betcha. Now, an autopsy revealed both the cause of death and the sexual assault that took place postmortem, but it also revealed her last meal, a burger and fries, which could potentially be a useful piece of information when trying to piece together her last steps before the assault. Now, other than this and two sets of footprints that were found leading away from the crime scene and a set of tire tracks, investigators didn't have a whole lot of information to go on to identify the woman or what happened. They began trying to run license plate numbers for everyone who had visited the park around the time of the woman's murder. It unfortunately didn't help them identifying her at all. And there was no record of her or who they thought she could have been arriving in the area. So they're going through these records. No one matches a missing persons report. No one matches the description of her. It's just simply she has no record of being in this area.
That's so bizarre.
Yeah. And now this now brought up the possibility that her body may have been dumped here after being killed somewhere else. Now, we do know many of these things happened post-mortem.
Right.
So it is a possibility she was killed somewhere else, dumped here, the post-mortem things occurred in this spot, and then the killer left.
Okay. Yeah. That could very well be.
Yeah. And if that is the case, it only complicates the matter further because now they may not have a crime scene even.
Yeah. Well, I mean, gosh, I feel like solving a murder is hard enough. And then this just makes it tenfold.
Oh, 100%. And this person, whoever committed this, is doing all this on purpose.
Yeah.
To ensure that they don't get caught.
They had this planned, which is just so disgusting.
Now, she was buried 3 months later in October of 1974 after the case went cold. She was buried as a Jane Doe in St. Peter's Cemetery near the center of town. Her grave held a small headstone with the words that read, quote, unidentified female body found Race Point Dunes, July 26, 1974.
Oh, I hate that.
I know. It's something that I don't think anyone should have on their headstone.
No.
But in the very least, at least you do have a final resting place,
though. Well, yeah, it's nice that they do give them that. But, yeah, I mean, someone would have had to loved her and knew her. And
oh, for sure. It's just who and where are they and where did she come from? That's the only question.
Yeah, because I guess technically she could even be from another area of like the country.
She could she could be from another country even.
Yeah.
We have no clue.
Yeah.
Now, despite the short time period that had passed at this point, police did not give up easily. They pored over thousands of missing persons cases. And of course, the already mentioned vehicles, the information on what had gone through the area and the time of her death. Mm-hmm. And no matter what they did, it seemed like they just could not get any leads. No matches, no nothing. There was nothing that they could find. No other evidence was found despite consistent revisits and searching through the surrounding area where she was initially discovered. So even though that they can't find anything, they're like, well, what if we go back and maybe we could find something else? Consistently, they're doing this and they just can't find any more information. Mm. They can't get a lead. They can't get any farther ahead.
Well, it sounds like they're not giving up, though. And I do really love that.
They are not giving up.
And that's awesome.
Though the case was cold, it didn't mean investigators even forgot about her. A few years later had passed by and still they wanted to find who she was. They were certain that if they could find her identity, they could find who killed her.
Mm-hmm.
In 1979, they took the skull of the Jane Doe, which was not buried with her body, because in hopes that it would, you know, help identifying her.
Okay.
And they did a clay facial reconstruction of what she may look like. In 1980, her remains were also unearthed in hopes to collect any missing possible evidence and obtain a DNA sample. Still, regardless of their attempts, there were no advancements in the case.
Yeah. I'm actually shocked that they're just, I mean, I know that that happens, like, you know, they have to close the case for lack of evidence, but it's still ongoing. But it just seems like they're really, you know, it affected them. They want this solved. I like this.
Oh, they definitely do. And I don't think they ever closed this case. It was just left open as a cold case.
Oh, okay.
No. When they close a case, I'm pretty sure it generally doesn't get reopened sort of thing. It's like, yeah, this isn't going to get solved sort of thing.
Yeah. But I mean,
I could be wrong, but
there's this asshole running around that needs to, you know, be in prison.
Yeah, definitely. I can agree with you on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there were a few leads that investigators had looked into. including in 1987 when a Canadian woman allegedly told a friend that she saw her father strangle a woman in Massachusetts around 1972. Police attempted to locate this woman, but unfortunately they were unsuccessful. And I just want to say, okay, why the fuck would you not come forward if you saw someone strangle someone sooner?
Yeah. I mean, unless you, there's many reasons, right? Maybe you were like afraid or something, but
yeah, fair
many
enough.
Reasons, but not many
excuses. I don't know.
Good reasons, I guess.
I don't know. I can understand because if you think that you yourself are in danger, I totally get it. Makes sense. But also this to me just sounds like she's having a passing conversation with like a friend at a nail salon sort of situation. Oh, this one time I saw my dad strangle this chick. And it's like, why is this such a casual conversation for you right now? Like, that's the impression I get.
Yeah, it should not be a casual conversation.
If it's a casual conversation, you should have long already have gone to the police.
Yeah, the police should definitely have already known.
Because if you have, like we already talked about, an excuse or a reason why you're not doing it, you're not having a casual conversation about
no.
it.
No.
So regardless, though, the police could not attempt this woman. And there is a possibility that it was even just a rumor. So,
okay.
Another woman claimed that the reconstruction of the victim looked like her sister who had disappeared in Boston in 1974. But no luck.
Okay.
Investigators also followed a lead involving a missing criminal, Rory Jean Kessinger, and other missing women. However, all of them were ruled out.
Hmm.
No matter who they looked into, no matter what lead they did have, they still found themselves with a mystery and a cold case.
Yep, there's just no smoking gun, hey?
Yeah, and it remained a mystery for years to come. Like, despite her body being exhumed two more times for samples.
Two more times.
Yeah, once in 2000 and another in 2013. Now, during this time, her skull sat on the desk of Provincetown Police Chief, the police chief. It was sitting there as a reminder of the case that they have yet to solve.
Good God.
And in 2010, the skull was scanned for a computer-generated facial reconstruction this time. Even still, the case remained cold, just as it was since the day it arrived on their desk the first time.
Okay, wow. I can't believe just how much they're not giving up on this. Like, the skull is just there as a daily reminder.
Yeah.
That this is not solved and, like, we got to find this person. And
right.
Wow.
Like, at first when I read that the skull was just sitting on the police chief's desk, like, when I say it's a daily reminder, that's my words. Because at first I was like, well, that's kind of like almost disrespectful sort of thing, right? Like, why would you do that? But also in the same sense, I've got a bit of a morbid curiosity and I would love to own a human skull because I would love to take care of it.
Okay, that's where that conversation came from.
Yes. Yes, it was.
While Ben was researching this, he's like, hey, would you want to own a human skull? It's like, that's so random. And also, I don't think so.
Well, I would love to have it for the fact that it could be a beautiful piece. It's like beauty after death sort of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I feel like if you respect that piece of that person and you still like let them rest and you take care of them, I think it could be a beautiful thing sort of thing. And then I kind of got thinking about that in this police chief sense. I'm like, okay, well, what if he's not just like, oh, it's a fucking paperweight, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if he does have a reason for keeping it? And what better reason for a police chief to keep a skull on the desk like that would be for a simple reminder to say, we got to solve this and we got to find out who this person is.
Well,
not
yeah.
only for us, but for her so she can rest.
Totally. And it also, I feel like, is kind of a symbol of why they do the job too. Like, it represents her, but it also just represents, you know, it's that one case that got away, but also, you know, we're here for this reason and like we're protecting people and like solving unimaginable things that happen to them.
Yeah. We could talk about the skull and being on his desk for, I could go on for hours about this because it is a fascinating topic to me. But in my best guess, it was there for that reminder. It was there, as you said, to represent, you know, what they're there for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the skull sat. And because of that, they were able to use it and make a computer-generated reconstruction as well. Now, it would take another 5 years until the next lead came in.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
In August of 2015, there was talk of an unidentified woman that might have been an extra in the famous movie Jaws. You know, the shark movie, yep. Right? Which was filmed in 1974 in Martha's Vineyard, not too far from where the woman's body was found, only about 100 miles away. Now, Joe Hill, the son of the writer, Stephen King, of Jaws, brought this idea to the attention of the police because he noticed a woman in the movie's beach scene who resembled the description of the lady in the Lady of the Dunes. Now, she was wearing a blue bandana and jeans very similar to the ones found with the body.
Really?
Yes. Now, it was a very interesting lead to some. Others, you know, dismissed it right away. But ultimately, it would not lead to identifying the woman, just like any of the other leads before it. In 2022, the skeletal remains of Jane Doe were sent off to Othram for analysis. Using New Age advanced DNA technology, they created a DNA profile from the remains, which were then used to find distant relatives through a process called genetic genealogy, which combines DNA testing with traditional genealogy research. The same way how the Golden State Killer was identified in 2018, they were finally able to find the identity of the Lady of the Dunes.
Oh my goodness. Okay. I mean, this is cool because it's like they almost knew that technology would advance, right? And they're, you know, keeping her, well, they had to exhume her a couple times, which sucks, but this is good. Okay.
It's good. They held out hope. They did not give up. And like you say, they were just waiting for the moment when they had the break in the case.
Yeah.
And this is where it comes. So on October 31st, on Halloween of 2022, the FBI office in Boston released a public statement that revealed that the victim was a woman by the name of Ruth Marie Terry.
Ruth. Okay.
Yeah. So Ruth Terry was born on September 8th, 1936 in Whitwell, Tennessee, to John and Eva Terry. In 1957, Ruth left Whitwell after a short-lived marriage and found work as a Fisher Body Automotive, at the Fisher Body Automotive plant in Livonia, Michigan. The following year, she gave birth to her son, Richard. However, facing financial struggles, Ruth made the difficult decision to allow her workplace superintendent to adopt her son. And after the adoption, Ruth had moved to California. On February 16th, 1974, Ruth would marry a man by the name of Guy Rockwell Mudivin, who was an antiques dealer in Reno, Nevada. 4 months before her death, the couple visited Ruth's family in Whitwell. Ruth's grandniece, Brittany, later recalled that Ruth seemed different whenever she was with Guy, who seemed to display apparent possessive behavior. After visiting family, Ruth and Guy mentioned plans to travel across the U.S. in search of antiques, because he is an antique dealer, right? Including stops in Massachusetts. In late summer that same year, Guy returned to Tennessee alone and informed Ruth's family that she had gone missing from her California home. He stayed briefly with them and claimed not to know where she went.
Ugh.
Ruth's brother, James, decided to travel to California in search of his sister, and here he hired a private investigator to find her. The investigator reported that all of Ruth's belongings had been sold and that she had left the state voluntarily, possibly joining a religious group. So he just spat a whole bunch of bullshit. Yeah, that private investigator took their money, made a story up, and walked away with the cash.
Didn't even do the fucking job.
Correct.
That's a piss off, eh?
That's a fucking douche canoe and a half.
Holy shit.
Yep.
And so she didn't even really get reported as a missing person then. Or she was also being reported, I guess, in a totally different state, wasn't she?
Yeah. She's over in Tennessee.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
So over the following years, Ruth was presumed, her home was in California, then her family, and then where she went missing. So it's three different states,
No kidding.
So over the following years, though, Ruth was presumed dead but Ruth's sister-in-law, Jan, speculated that Ruth might have been in a witness protection program, unable to contact her family. Now, her reasoning behind that, I'm not too certain. It could have been with what the PI told them, being, you know, joining a religious group or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe things going south, who knows, for whatever reason, because those groups tend to have some sort of big blowout fallout.
Mm-hmm.
And then she might have had to leave the group and then being in protection because against maybe the leader. I don't know. I can only speculate what her speculations were.
Mm-hmm.
So when a person goes missing or is murdered, their family or spouse is always, of course, the first suspect investigators look at. And in this case, it was no different. They immediately honed in on Guy.
Who was just fucking living his life. Like, hate that.
Yeah. So Guy had a complex history. He was born as an orphan and was adopted by Abraham Albert Zarowski Mudovin and Sylvia Lily Silverbot. He had a brother named Michael Semyon J. Mudovin. In 1942, Guy lived in New York City and attended the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. He married Jolene May Loop on May 11th of 1946 in Bellevue, Pennsylvania, but they divorced in July 16th of 1956. In 1958, he remarried a woman by the name of Manzanita Eileen Manzi Ray in Kootenai, Idaho. Manzanita had a daughter named Deloze Ann Mearns from a previous marriage. Both Manzanita and her daughter, Deloze, went missing in Seattle on April 1st of 1960, with Guy becoming the main suspect. He tried to run, but was arrested by the FBI for avoiding giving testimony into their deaths. Shortly after, on July 29th, 1960, Guy remarried once again to Everly Marie Emerson in King County, Washington. He later faced larceny charges for cheating his third wife's family out of $10,000 around the time of his second wife's disappearance. He was convicted in 1961, but had his sentence suspended in 1962 on the condition he repaid the money.
Holy shit. I'm still on the wife and the daughter that went missing, and you've already moved on.
Well, I didn't really move
on. Good gosh.
I did not really move on because investigators found human body parts in Guy's septic tank in 1974.
Holy shit.
But they couldn't prove they were from the missing women or even tie him to the remains. So he walked free from that.
Are you fucking kidding me?
He was also a suspect in the murder of Henry Lawrence Red Baird, a bread truck driver, and the disappearance of Barbara Jo Kelly, a waitress, in June of 1950. Barbara went missing and was found on the beach with a gunshot wound to the head.
So this guy is a fucking serial killer.
You could say that. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, how many freaking people did he end up killing by the time he gets caught?
I mean, that's speculative because he was never technically tied to any of those. Calling him a serial killer is still speculation.
Nope, I'm doing it though.
Totally get you. I'm on board with you. I just playing devil's advocate.
I know.
For the facts, it is only speculation. He was never charged. He was never found guilty. He was never prosecuted. He was only a suspect in all of those. So,
you know, it's just
that being said, I'm with you. He's a douche canoe. He fucking did it.
It just pisses me off because it's almost like a luck thing, like that he's like a lucky son of a bitch that just gets away with all these things.
Yeah.
Can I have a little bit of that luck for something else?
Why? What do you want to get away with? What the fuck?
No, I don't want to get away with anything. I just, it'd be cool if something nice happened. I would like some luck in my life that didn't involve like luck from killing someone.
Touche.
I don't know. I just
feel like I have to sleep with one eye open.
Oh my gosh. He just doesn't deserve that luck, you know?
Yeah, okay.
Is what I'm getting at.
Okay, I gotcha.
Like this is just pissing me off now.
Yeah. Well, Guy eventually moved to California around 1976, where he went into retirement from his job, wherein he was at the time working as an executive vice president of a silver store. He worked at a radio station and a tobacco shop a little bit thereafter as well. Now, it was clear to authorities that with his history and what they had just uncovered now with the relationship with Ruth,
mm-hmm.
that he was the man responsible for the murder. The only problem was they were about 20 years too late. Guy had passed away in his home on March 14th, 2002, at the age of 78 years old. And he was deemed responsible for her murder.
Okay.
He is the murderer. He's passed, so he's not convicted technically.
But he did it.
But he is dubbed Ruth's murderer.
At first when you said that they were too late, I was just like, what do you mean? Like that they weren't going to be able to convict him or something? Like I was just pissed.
Well, they're not able to convict him. He's dead. Like you said.
But like it, I thought like he was, they weren't, like he was going to just continue being like a free man.
Oh, I see. Well, he did though. As you said, he just got to just live his life. You said that about like 5-10 minutes ago. He's just out there living his life. And that's exactly what he did.
Yes. Which is horrible. But I was thinking that once they figured this out, that he still just got to continue living his life, which would be even more horrible. But it's all just a bag of shit, really.
It's just like, a bag. He's a bag of shit.
Yeah. Like it all just sucks.
So that is where this story ends. They found the Lady of the Dunes name. They identified her as Ruth. They found who killed her, and there's no prosecution. There is no resting easy. The only thing that we can really say is those two things. She's been identified, and so is her killer.
Mm-hmm.
But with his history since 1974 to 2002, it begs the question, what else could he have done in that
time?
Well,
yeah. Like, how many lives did he take?
Yeah.
Yikes. Ugh. You know, that's just going to make me have a terrible day.
Sorry? My bad?
Because that is just, like, it's such a piss off, really, that he just, like, I mean, we're talking about Ruth here, so, like, takes her life and we don't even know much about her, but for some reason I just have like this picture of this like beautiful woman that's just like shines so brightly and like he just takes her life and then, yeah, just gets to live on and keep doing the shit that I'm sure he kept doing.
Well, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Just, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to bring up Ruth's Wikipedia here. Just so you can see what she did look like.
Oh, no. Do I want to know?
Well, you said that she sounds like she's such a beautiful person. And I mean, physically, she is very beautiful. I mean, I don't know what she was like as a human being, but we can at least take a look at the photo that they have up of her. Sorry, if you guys are listening to this, just give a quick Google search and you'll find her photo.
Okay. Oh, I mean, she's a beautiful smile.
She is a very bright and very beautiful smile.
Yeah. How old was she when she passed then?
I would have to do the math. Yeah. She was born in 36 and passed away in 74. So she was 42.
Was she?
I believe. No, 37. Oh,
yeah.
37.
Yeah. Okay.
My bad.
I was trying to do that math.
My math in my head is horrible. Gosh, math is not my strong suit. Ugh. I think we've gone over this before.
Yeah.
We're terrible at math.
Well, and especially too, like now you just, like I almost was like, hey, let me get my calculator. But it, I don't know. You shouldn't need your calculator for that, I guess. Eh? I don't know. Huh. That's terrible. Wow.
She was identified though. And her gravestone is not going to read what it did before.
Right.
Which is good.
Very, very good. Yeah. And it's so, like, I feel so much effort was put into this case, which is slightly, I don't know the word, but it
kind of puts a person at ease a little bit. It's almost relieving.
Yeah.
They didn't give up. They kept hope. Even over decades, they were patient. And that right there is what solved it.
Mm-hmm.
The patience of the investigators, the patience of passing it on to new investigators and everyone being willing and doing their job.
Mm-hmm. And I almost hope, I don't know, I just had this like picture in my head that like as they're putting this new tombstone on there with her identification, right, that people involved in this case are there and they're and they're feeling like they did like a really good job and,
yeah,
and, you know, gave like the family and stuff closure.
Yeah.
So
one thing, and this is a speculation. I don't know. I couldn't find information on it. But when you said you picture like everyone laying her to rest, mm-hmm. I honestly picture the moment that they put her skull to rest with the rest of her remains too.
Oh, whoa, Ben. Okay.
I don't know if they did, but I would assume that they did.
Yeah. Wow.
And I think that would have been the moment that really put it all together.
Huh. Yeah. Us just saying these like last little ends of this, like what we're picturing and stuff, this would be like kind of a really good movie. Hey,
it would be. It's very heartbreaking and it would make a good film.
Yeah. Like her story just turned into a movie and this freaking asshole guy, I can't even remember what the hell his name was.
Yeah. We don't need to know.
But him, you know, and like what he's done, and like it's quite bizarre that he was able to get away with this stuff. But so many douche canoes are able to get away with a lot of things, I think, which is terrifying.
And such is the world out there. Unfortunately, it's just the world we live in. It's a scary fucking place.
You would think, though, if they found freaking remains in his septic tank, that could be pinned on him.
Yeah. But I don't know how it wasn't, but it wasn't.
Wow. Well, I mean, them, depending how much the bodies were left, there was probably no evidence and stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, they couldn't identify DNA or anything clearly because they couldn't pin the remains to the missing or link the remains to the missing women. So
you have to wonder if like bare hands and stuff were removed as well, because he might have had that could have been like his, what's
calling
that called?
Card.
Yeah.
He could have pulled teeth and hands from them too.
Hmm. Okay. And one more thing I just want to state is it was very interesting the date that they chose to release all this information.
I know.
Being on Halloween.
I know.
I almost feel like it's interesting that they didn't wait a day or something, because it just seems like a very interesting day to release it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So anyway, good job.
Well, I don't think to the authorities that releasing it on Halloween makes any difference. It's just get the information out there. It's just another
when
day.
They have it ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So that is the case of, well, Lady of the Dunes, but also Ruth Marie Terry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So thanks to our patrons, because you guys turned us onto this case. Very interesting one. And I'm glad that I got to research it.
No kidding.
And I'm glad that Ruth got to finally be named and laid to rest properly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a terrible end, but it's a good end as well. I mean, it ended the best way it could.
It ended
the best way it could after terrible things had happened.
Yes. There's other things I wish could have happened but didn't, like the douche canoe actually being prosecuted would have been fantastic.
Yeah.
But.
Well, yeah. Okay.
There's always a silver lining, and we have a silver lining here.
A little bit of one. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Thank you so much for listening. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode. And if you want to check out more, you can go ahead in the description of this podcast where we have all our links. We got things like Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, where we're really active, and Patreon, where you can go get the behind the scenes access to all the good content. Maybe you can have your say in what our next episode is going to be. Mm-hmm. So you can go check it out there. And if not, you're listening here, and that means the world to us too. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So until next week, when it will be my turn.
Okay, I wasn't going to call you on it.
I know.
Nicole's finally doing a case next time. She's diving deep, so.
Well, yeah, I am reading a book, so about it. And yeah, it will be ready next week.
Okay. Well, we're holding you to it. Next week.
Yeah.
I might be doing an episode. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, my God.
Next week, Nicole will be doing the episode.
So until then.
Stay wicked.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.